she's at another level.
It like reverts you back to that high school you got that call for the first time.
It's like, oh, like the aura around. Like she's just so
crazy. I bet she smells so good. Oh my God. She smells really good. I bet she does.
So good.
That was one of my questions for you. What does she smell like?
Her hair so soft.
I did not think of that question.
Man, rich people's hair and skin routine. Like we don't even know.
They have all the stuff. And she probably has like the best stuff that you can't even like buy.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm over here with my Aquaphor that'll do just fine.
Hi, I'm Mark.
Hey, I'm Nicole, and this is Nevermind the Music. Mark, who are we going to talk to today?
What do you mean, who, Nicole? Don't you mean, what are we talking about today, Mark? Like you always say?
No, Mark. On season two, we're going to have guests on our sidetrack. And we have an awesome guest with us today. We're so lucky. Can you give us an intro?
We do. And we are super happy to welcome our very first guest for season two, Bree Nguyen. Bree is a music and tech executive turned professor and crazy Mariah Carey girl. Is that the other title?
Yeah, I own it. It's outside my door.
Awesome.
How do you guys know each other? How did Bree like come to our podcast?
So Bree, in addition to being the perfect guest for the crazy story and insight I'm about to share with you and what she's going to tell us about the music industry, we went to high school together.
But
Bree left after like 3 years.
Yeah.
And when we were talking off mic, she said, Mark, back then, did you know me as crazy Mariah Carey girl? And, you know, because we weren't in the same friend group, but we had connective tissue. Like we were cool, but like one of your good friends was one of my good friends, right?
Cool.
And the answer is yes, but only after you left.
Oh, okay. So,
like you were a kid in my class or whatever, right, junior year, but the Mariah Carey thing was like, no, she left high school to work for Mariah Carey. And it's like, wait, wow. What happened?
While they were
all doing their senior year, I was gallivanting around the US.
Oh my. So I am going to share the bite-sized version of your crazy story, which starts with Mariah Carey, but then goes all the way up the food chain, so to speak, to you being your own record executive and working for Facebook, etc. But then, yeah, you got to help me with my timeline because I'm 16-year-old Mark is super confused. So if people want to hear the long version, like the full, you know, you have a great conversation on the Get Together podcast about specifically this moment in the late 90s when you join up with Mariah's organization. There's an episode from August 17th, 2020, the secret sauce behind Mariah Carey's fan community. And the secret sauce is definitely Bree Nguyen, because this is an early internet story where the kids are somehow running the multi-million dollar business enterprises, which is crazy. So you're a Mariah super fan in high school. You're on early internet message boards. Are we talking like AOL? Or are we talking cooler than that?
We're talking even earlier than that.
Okay.
News groups, the web did not have a browser yet when I was on. So I was on using news groups because my dad is a software engineer. So he was, I said this story in the other podcast, but I just have to say it real quick to you. The other podcast is a community marketing podcast, and that's what my career is. This, we're going to get into the music, right? Which I'm super excited to get into, but what happened was my dad would come down to dinner and say things like, did you know Mariah Carey was born in Long Island, New York, you know, as a way to try to connect with his 12-year-old daughter. And after a while, I was like, how do you know this? I need this. I need this information. And so he got me set up on some news groups where I could get the information. And so we're talking early. And then I got on AOL.
Wow.
Yeah.
So this is like 90 message boards.
Yeah, this is like 94 to 99.
Oh, that is super early. Yeah.
And how,
that's crazy.
I hate to say like how old were you then, but just so we can like get an image now, how were you like, you were in high school, but like a freshman in high school maybe?
No, on the news groups, I was in junior high. Yeah.
Wow.
So by the time we're in high school, we have AOL and I am 14 to 16. So I left high school the day I turned 16.
The day you were legally allowed to.
No, like literally I turned 16 on Tuesday. Bye. We graduated on Wednesday, and I got my driver's license on Thursday and like left.
So I think I want to hear more about, because that was the mystique to me as a kid who was trapped there. I love it. By the way, everybody's like, San Diego is this beautiful place. But yeah. When you grow up there, you're like, I got to get out of here. I got to get to rural Arkansas, or like anything else is better.
No, like actually.
Yeah, but there was, our mutual friends were like, the anti-San Diego contingent. And I feel like, can we come back?
Who both of us are still very close friends with.
Let me guess, they live in San Diego right now.
Nobody lives in San Diego.
Nobody lives there anymore. You are on this podcast because when I decided we're going to do Mariah Carey, let's do guests. I was like, oh my God, are you still in touch with Brie? And the answer was yes. And you agreed. So anyways, we barely even touched the story, folks. So super fan on the message boards. Eventually, you become essentially like a mod or like a community leader on the boards. You graduate early. You move to LA. You move to LA before like you're making the business really happen. You're just there. You're an early college student.
Correct. The original plan was go to college. So that's what I did. Yeah. I wanted to go to film school. I had these film school aspirations. So okay, that lasted awesome. 6 weeks, but I went to film school.
Awesome. Yeah. That's the dream. So somebody on the message board hears that you are going to an album signing at one of the record stores in LA, right? Mm-hmm. Record stores are a thing. Look it up.
Tower Records Sunset. And
oh my gosh.
They say, sweet, sweet. Mm-hmm. They send you a letter. Hey, can you share this with Mariah? You go, sure, I guess so. That's cool. And then 10,000 more people email you or post their letters and ask you to print them. You do. You print them out 2 inches thick of paper, I think. And you, quivering with excitement, holding back tears, hand them to Mariah Carey in person at this album signing.
Correct. But the tears were not held back.
They were not held back. Okay. So her security has to be called in.
Correct. They get you away. But I own it.
She takes the stack of paper. And a few days later, you get a voicemail, but posted on her website because she maybe didn't have your number, thanking you and thanking the community. And then some number of days later, you actually get a call from her manager who they want to put you to work to get Mariah Carey on, I guess, the number one spot on TRL, Carson Daly, right? So that's 90. Is this 99?
This is November 1999.
So which record had she just dropped?
This is the Rainbow album, and the single was Heartbreaker.
So for our younger listeners, TRL. Yeah. Yes. Was a daily show on MTV when they played music videos called Total Request Live, and you could call in and you would try to upvote your favorite singer or songwriter or musician to get their music video to have like top billing for the day. And it was a scene, man, like very, very competitive, very like with the finger on the pulse of pop culture. So
Nicole, did you ever call in and vote on TRL?
I did not. I spent those years like listening to Eric Clapton and Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. I kind of missed the window. But I have like gone back. I go on like YouTube rabbit holes sometimes, and I like watching some of the bands that are still like, I want to go back and like see NSYNC and see the Backstreet Boys on Total Request Live. Mm. And that was really the demographic of that in my head. And Mariah Carey at that time was popular, but like a little bit older. Mm-hmm. So I can understand her desire to need someone like you to help her kind of toe into that world, even though she's an icon and so super duper popular. It just wasn't, from my perspective, like her lane at the time. Does that seem right?
Yeah, so that's exactly right. And so at this point, you're talking 1999. So she's a decade into her career.
Right.
And why they call me is because they have 10,000 letters. So I always tell people you have to put yourself, even if you're a youngin that was born in the 2000s, you have to imagine what it was like being a teenager in 99. There are no cell phones,
right?
Or they have brick cell phones, right? The Zach Morris cell phone. And
we're not going to unpack who Zach Morris is.
Yeah, we're not going to unpack Google it.
It's worth talking about.
Yeah. There's no cell phones. We have basic AOL chat. TV is still our mainstream media, right? Mm-hmm. And then the main form of expression when you're a teenager, because that's my thing, especially as I became a marketer later, teenagers are, you're trying to find your identity still. You're trying to figure out how to express yourself. You're trying stuff out, trying stuff on, you know? So a TRL was kind of a big piece of that, and musicality of that, of like, how do you express yourself, you know, through this kind of stuff. So for you, it was Eric Clapton and all that. Yeah.
No, I've been teaching.
But you wouldn't call for Eric Clapton, probably, right? Like, you would have been, me too, right? Because I was more like, at that point, like 99, I'm listening to like rock or punk or whatever. I wasn't going to call in and vote for TRL, but that's what I knew it was going on. I knew those were the popular artists, all that stuff.
No, I've been teaching adolescent development this semester. And a big part of our conversation is that like identity versus role confusion piece, that it's a job of a teenager to help, to try to figure out their self-concept. And it's really interesting. It must have been really interesting to be a teenager whose self-concept was the Mariah Carey girl.
I love that. Yeah, and I had a lot of my own issues with that at the time. Now I'm of age to be very confident in who I am, so I talk very openly about it. But to put yourself back in those shoes is fun, kind of. And so to go back to the business, so she's a decade into her career, and so one day they get this 10,000 letters. The internet is so young. Google won't even come for another 2 years. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's where we are at. So when they saw 10,000 letters, they were like, wait, this girl knows 10,000 people. Like, what is happening? And that was the questions I got. They were saying like, wait, how do you know 10,000 people? Can you get 10,000 people to do something? And what started to come out is exactly what you said. These are exaggerated words a little, but very close. They basically were like, Mariah's a legend and we can't get her on this countdown because it is full of no names, quote unquote. Huh. Backstreet Boys, NSYNC, Britney Spears, Christina Aguilera, Mandy Moore. That's the year they all came out, 1999, all of them. And all of them had web presences and communities on message boards. Mariah did not.
And the irony is like Christina Aguilera doesn't exist without Mariah Carey.
Correct.
And that's irony of it. Like, it all starts with Mariah Carey, all of that.
So that's how it all started. And then you fast forward another 10 years into my career when I would become a senior executive and I would go to Facebook to launch Instagram and all of that stuff. Mariah was one of the only large artists on social at that time because I trained her in 1999. Wow. But she actually helped me personally so much, professionally so much. So she's a great person. So we have a very long history together. And I would do my annual pilgrimage to Vegas when she got a residency to go say hi and all of that. So can't wait to dig in. Did I just reveal what we're talking about today? Yeah, Mariah.
That's Mariah Carey.
But you get hired by Mariah Carey, and then you go on to work for some of these enemy forces, NSYNC.
Correct.
Michelle Branch, Ashley Teasdale, Linkin Park, like My Chemical Romance. You're doing the emo bands.
Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Oh my gosh, stop it.
Red Hot Chili Peppers. And then you end up at Facebook doing their community stuff too. So, and you're also, I mentioned college faculty. Like, this is kind of crazy. So folks, like, listen to the get together if you want all the details. But I have one question, and this is super rude, but I'm going to ask it.
I love it.
When did they start paying you? As opposed to, oh my God, this is such an honor. Is it like a painful amount of time before they started paying you? Or were you like a 16-year-old and suddenly there's like...
No, painful amount.
Okay.
Painful amount. And the amount is painful too.
Oh no.
And here's the thing. I'm literally by myself in Los Angeles at 16. I thought just being on Sunset Boulevard was like, I made it. I made it. Yeah. So I didn't know enough and I did not have the guidance to even ask. I thought this is the best it can get. That is one of the reasons why I love being a professor now, because I teach, give the knowledge is power. So it was a painful amount of time. And once they did, it was like minimum wage. And by the way, minimum wage in 1999 was $6.75 or something. Yeah. But I thought it was riches.
So case in point, though, let me just say, while you literally 1999, while you were earning $6.75 working for Mariah Carey, I was earning $6.75 working at a Taco Bell in San Diego. So I will say, no shade to food service workers, but you were at least advancing your future career. There isn't really an A to B
around.
From...
Well, she flew me around for free and food was free and things like that. Sure. When I was with her, everything was free and I was staying at 5-star hotels and things. Oh, but yeah, gosh.
Was it really when you got hired by another artist, whether it was Michelle Branch or somebody, was that when you finally had kind of what they were treating as a real job that had like a real salary and stuff like that? Was it not until... Yeah, I don't blame Mariah. It's just when they've got some kid working for them, it's kind of hard to not be like, well, let's just... She's fine. She doesn't
give her
anything,
a cheeseburger.
Right?
She'll be stoked.
Yeah, and it shows you how early the internet was. It was just this thing over there, right? So it wasn't people weren't investing money in it. So no shade to Mariah. Trust me, she more than made up for it throughout the 20 years I've known her. So to answer your question, yes, real job. So my immediate next job after that was with NSYNC. So now I dropped out of college, just FYI. Right. So NSYNC's digital marketing manager at the time saw Mariah on the countdown because I did succeed in getting her on the countdown many times. And it was very out of place, right? So it was noticeable. And give the marketing managers of NSYNC credit at that time, who I'm also still very good friends with. They were really young too. They were like 24 maybe. And one of the women, this woman named Sabrina, who I'm very close with still, she found me. She went digging and she like found me and she said, are you the girl doing the Mariah stuff? I said, yes. She's like, come in LA, come into our office. I want to talk to you. So I came in, hired me on the spot. NSYNC had their own digital marketing company, hired me on the spot. I worked for NSYNC while they were in the studio recording Bye 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 and No Strings Attached. So that year, then Bye 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 came out, blew up. That year I saw, so you were a freshman in college, Mark. I saw NSYNC, I think 36 times that year, because that was the year they kept wrapping around the country. That was their year. And I took everybody to the shows, all that, but
everyone except Mark, I guess.
Right? Yeah. Sorry, Mark, you missed out, but I'll take you to NSYNC show when they have their Vegas residency.
I'll see you there. That sounds great.
We just met. We're on a trip.
Nicole, you're awesome.
So you've like, touched Justin Timberlake, like you put your hand on him at one point.
Yes.
Or like you could have.
No, I was trying to think. Yes. Now he was really young at the time too.
So we probably shouldn't have been touching, right?
But probably not. But so he was very much just like following orders. So the person I worked with the most actually in the band was Chris.
Oh.
So Chris was like the leader, the one in it, the one actually doing business and
so
work.
Were you around when they had that like weird manager that they made those documentaries about? I can't, that like kind of exploited them and
yes, that
it
was
got kind of creepy.
Yes, but I never, we were separate from that. This was a separate company I never met him. Yeah.
Probably for the best.
Probably for the best.
Kind of like adjacent question
about,
you said you worked with the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yes.
Did you ever stand in a room with John Frusciante? Like stand in a room with him?
Nicole, the Red Hot Chili Peppers stories I have for you.
We don't have to talk. Can you come back like a different
time? Anytime. Okay. But Stadium Arcadium.
Gossip. Like I need
to
know.
Oh, I'm in. Call me up. Stadium Arcadium was the album I worked on. Danny California. And this is an offshoot, but I was an exec at Warner Brothers at that time. So many meetings with the band and with management.
Are they nice? They're nice.
I mean, normal. And it was all business, professional, intense in it. Very easy to work with in that they were open, wanted to do it, wanted to hear ideas, you know, which is not how all the bands are. And I remember at that time, they were like, we haven't released an album in years at that time. And they were real about it. They said, look, like 15-year-olds today don't even know who we are. So we need to start over. And that is pretty selfless of a band to say, a band of their stature to like say. And so they were very open to the early internet marketing ideas we had. And so I pitched them a bunch of ideas. So I actually led the charge on the initial marketing for Danny California.
Wow.
We went early, and then all the other marketing was so good. So it all just like came together. Yeah. So Stadium Arcadia. But yeah, that was a great album to work on.
It's a great album.
Yeah, it is.
And I'm glad John's okay. I mean, he seems like a really nice guy.
Everyone was great. Management's great. Yeah. After the show, after we finish talking about Mariah, I'll tell you the band's not as great.
Yeah, we can do that off mic.
Okay, off mic, maybe. Off mic. All right.
Do you like to laugh, geek out on music, and learn all about that band or artist who had that one song back in the day, but then seemed to fall off the face of the earth? If so, you need to subscribe to One Hit Thunder. Together with an array of interesting and hilarious guests, we do a weekly dive into one-hit wonders like Eiffel 65's Blue, Krayshawn's Gucci Gucci, EMF's Unbelievable, Delamitri's Roll to Me, Los Del Rio's Macarena, Musical Youth's Pass the Dutchie, and even Patrick Swayze's She's Like the Wind. So are you subscribed to One Hit Thunder or what? As Desiree would say, you gotta be. And as K7 would encourage, you gotta come baby come and join in on the fun of the One Hit Thunder podcast.
Can I just barrage you with very gossipy, surface level Mariah Carey questions?
Always.
Okay. Like, so you're close with her. Like, how close? Like, does she send you a Christmas card? Does she send you birthday presents? Is it more like when you're in the same city, you're like maybe meet up for a coffee or?
It's more coworker now. And okay. I would say it goes in and out. So it's kind of like high school friends, you know, like you don't see them all the time, but then when you do, you pick up right where you left off, you know?
Yeah. So kind of your relationship to Mariah Carey is kind of like your relationship to Mark.
Correct.
Cool. That's really cute. I'm in.
I'm sure you've spent hundreds of times more hanging out with Mariah than with me.
That is actually true. That is actually true. And then when I was working with her in multiple iterations, there were multiple times in her career, I was actually working with her. I'd see her all the time. And then it was, she trusts me as a business person. So she would typically, like when I was at Facebook and we were working on an album together, I was helping with the marketing, like people would pitch her all these things and she would turn to me. She would say, Bree, what should I do? You know, because she knows I will never steer her wrong. I will always put her first. And even if I tell her the craziest thing to do, she's like, okay, well, Bree said, so I'll do it.
So I guess I want to ask, what made Mariah so smart to like recognize? Yeah. Obviously the managers or whoever maybe recognized at first, like, oh, this is leveraging 10,000 fan letters or whatever. But for her and her people to recognize the potential that you had and like not just to like use you, but to trust you.
Yeah. Right?
They kind of gave you, it sounds like from the other podcast, like almost gave you the keys to the kingdom. Like you had their passwords to their online accounts. Like they trusted you and you were young and they trusted your judgment for something that they didn't know was really possible. Like, what is it about Mariah that you know, or even with other clients, like, what is the, like, character trait that enables them to be that way? It seems really hard to let go of control if you're them, right?
That's a great question, and actually is a testament to why Mariah is still around with a career 30 years later, like right now. So you can say, you can argue whatever you want of how big she is or not, but pick any artist of her era who's still going on MTV and mainstream and all this and is still like making a career, and there's none. So this is a testament to her business acumen, and then actually draws back to the song we're going to talk about. So in 99, give you a little Mariah history. In 99, she's a decade into her career. She's had a gnarly divorce to the president of her record label, right? Because she was married to the president of her record label. So now she's divorced from him, but still on the label, just FYI. And her whole career, although successful, was very highly managed, right? Being told what to do. And I definitely want to talk about this in music history to remember people who didn't grow up in the 90s or even who did don't remember, but music was divided by race back then. Like it just was. They just called it pop or hip hop, but it was race divided. And she was a biracial artist. That's one of the reasons why I connect with her so much. I'm biracial. And anyway, so in 99, although she had a manager, the manager worked for her. Does that make sense? She's so big, like she decides, like she's the boss. It's Mariah Carey Inc., right? And so in Mariah being in control, she is, and I know this of her, she's always trying stuff. She's not scared to try stuff and to figure it out. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. So it, looking back, it's like, she's so smart. Like, she didn't know what this was, but she knew she needed something. Now, for giving the keys to the kingdom, it's so early. It's less about how much they trusted me and more about how little they knew about the internet. Thus, it had low value, right? So they're like, she can't mess anything up over there. Just give her the keys. Yeah. It was more about that. Over time, when I got the first single on TRL, then they were like, holy shit. Okay, wait. Yeah, exactly. Because, and then look from Mariah's perspective. Mariah's going to Sony, her label, and in 99, you have record execs that, okay, the senior record execs at that time are guys that came up in the 70s, okay? So you have like the Hall & Oates guys and like whatever, that's who's telling Mariah what to do on TRL, okay? And then you have this 16-year-old in Long Beach like saying like, no, you're doing it wrong. And it just did the one thing that this entire label could not do for months. Mariah's like, F you, I already didn't like you. Like, now forget it. I know what I'm doing. Like,
let's stay with her.
After that first single, Mariah was like, whatever Brie wants, this is what we're doing. By then she was seasoned enough, strong enough, burned enough, skin thickened enough to just like do what she wanted to do.
She was such a boss. Even like the fantasy video, she's like directing the video.
Correct.
On roller skates, like doing it.
But Fantasy, she was still under the thumb, and that, because that's what, 95 or something, is that song?
She was under the thumb and fought for it, man. Mm-hmm. Like, you hear the stories from that time from her, and she does not get enough recognition for that video and for the ODB remix. Although people mention it, the ODB remix of Fantasy.
Yeah.
That is one of the first times, like, go back into music history and check me, but it's one of the first times in mainstream media where there's a crossover, where there's a pop and hip hop crossover. When you talk about it in music history, they say pop and hip hop, but I'm going to remind you it was race. Right. Okay. So it was a black and white crossover, and that was insane. So, it was pretty incredible. And then knowing what would come after, that actually was the first one. And so for her to just be so fearless, and what I know of her now, and you see her now she doesn't give a F, because she's like, I'm Mariah, like, right. You in or not? So to have that kind of confidence back then, I mean, it was tough. Like, just think about when you were trying to, you know, make your career, those listening who are like still grinding or paying your dues, like, it's hard.
She had to free herself personally and financially from the record company in order to like finally get to call it what she wanted, right? I mean, it that's 10 whole years of how many number one hits in that span?
15?
We went through the list, didn't we, Nicole, in
it's
our episode?
Lot.
It's a lot. Yeah, it's crazy to still not be able to kind of define your, I mean, she did, but it took just scraping away and fighting everybody. It was very predatory in a way that, like, I feel like was almost made into a joke in the 90s.
For sure. And remember, she's young. Like, her first album came out when she was 20, you know? So like, in this whole time she's in her 20s, remember your 20s? Mm. Man, I didn't have anything figured out.
I actually don't.
Yikes. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Like, blocked it all out. Yeah, so that too. So it's really interesting to look back on and look at it from that way. But yeah, it was all R&B. And actually, when we talk about the songs, you'll hear the R&B and gospel influence, you know, in there, but her being so managed, you know, of like what she sounded like, what she dressed like, what, you know, all of this stuff, until she got enough power to be able to call the shots.
And it's like a pretty common story, especially among young female artists, that they want to write their own narrative, but they're being told to act a different way. I mean, we talked about that briefly in the context of TLC, how Lisa Left Eye Lopez wanted to be a rapper, wanted to be an R&B artist, but they kept saying, no, this is a pop group. Like, that's what you're doing. And she kept trying to break out, and she never did. She never really did.
Yeah, and it goes to show you today, it's not so much like that, at least on the business side. Now, you see the output, you know, of what the CD is and whatever, but nowadays the industry is very different. Mm. Individuality, authenticity, that personality is actually rewarded now, you know? So, on the business side, that's what they're looking for.
So you said you want to start talking through some songs, some specific songs?
Do it.
Well, what is it about Heartbreaker specifically? Another single from that album had been the one that won, that worked for your strategy? Is there something about that one in particular that is why they decided to latch onto this strategy? Could it have been anything kind of? Do you think it was just the community was ready to be riled up kind of? Or is there something? And I'll put in a clip for a reminder if folks haven't heard it in a while. Do you think there's something in the special sauce of that song also?
For sure. It's an upbeat dance song. It's fun. And you should also rewatch the music video if you haven't in a while. It is an epic music video.
So good.
Epic. And she just won her first MTV Video Music Award ever this year.
Yeah,
and
this year.
I remember somewhere on MTV, they were saying like, Heartbreaker, she was robbed from Heartbreaker, and you should rewatch that video. So it was just a fun video. It was easy to like get excited about it, right? So it's a good first single in that way. It's not a ballad. It's not that. It's just like fun, dance, you know, sing along, that kind of thing.
Was One Sweet Day her previous biggest hit, or am I forgetting something? Because that was very much more a ballad. That was huge.
Yeah.
But maybe didn't fit as well with the 99 kind of Britney Backstreet Boys thing, right? Obviously it was too old for that, but the pop, the upbeat pop of it all, you know?
Mark, I really wish I had a Mariah Carey discography chart behind
like
me.
Like a PowerPoint.
Because Mark, One Sweet Day was about
96?
Eight singles before.
Okay, I'm missing a record then. Okay, so.
You're missing Butterfly.
Butterfly in the middle.
Yeah.
I heard One Sweet Day on the radio today and like literally cried. Still crying.
Yeah, and after One Sweet Day, there was Forever, which was another big one, which was, I think it's a number one. I can't remember. And then Butterfly had My All, which is a number one, and Butterfly. And there's a few other breakout songs from there, like Breakdown is the one with Bone Thugs and Harmony, which, can I tell a high school story?
Is it about Bone Thugs and Harmony?
It is about Bone Thugs and Harmony.
We're fans.
Episode 4 of Nevermind the Music on Bone Thugs, please.
It's my favorite episode we've ever done.
So there was like Bone Thugs and Harmony, Crossroads, all of that. So then Mariah did a song with Bone Thugs. The guy in high school that had a crush on me at that time was like obsessed with Bone Thugs. And then when Mariah did the song with Bone Thugs, he was so excited that he wrote out every single Bone Thug lyric for me for that song. And it was like the best gift I ever got.
What would your Bone Thugs in Harmony name be? Because they all had like wild names, like Wishbone, right?
Mark? Yes. Crazy, Wishbone, Crazy Bone. Crazy is my favorite.
Yeah,
yes.
Wait, a guy from high school?
Guy from high school wrote all the lyrics out for me.
What's his name?
I will edit it out. Can you tell me who it was?
No, I'm going to tell you after.
Okay, after. Okay, I'm writing that down. We have
to
know.
You don't know
who
he is. I don't think you knew who he is. He also bought me a pager.
Oh my God. We had like 2,500 people at our school. So Mark chiming in during the edit. She's right. I don't know this guy. He had game though.
It's kind of dizzying, actually.
How many singles Mariah has that, like, I just queued up Butterfly and it's like with no disrespect, like forget a song that was a number one hit is like a wild thing for me to be like,
My All
was the previous single before Heartbreaker, right? So,
yeah,
and that's 98. So only the year before.
Heartbreaker is her 14th number one.
Wow. Okay. Yeah,
at that Crazy. Time.
So I wanted to ask, like, kind of related to this whole why would they trust a teenager thing, no offense, but was the story about the fans and you on this message board seems so wholesome to me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's just the love, and the love that you're in tears meeting her the first time, and then she feels that 3 days later or whatever, calls, leaves the voicemail. Was it actually more wholesome back then? Or is it just teenagers are what teenagers are, and there's more noise around them now that kind of makes it feel like, can we find a corner of the internet where there's that much sort of, by the way, we're in the Lorehounds network. I have to say the Lorehounds community, super wholesome and everybody's super respectful. But for a major pop star, let's say, with millions of fans, if you go on a Taylor Swift message board, I know you're going to find a lot of love, but I feel like you're also going to have a troll in there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Making fun of everybody or so. So you saw that emerge and turn.
Yeah.
You literally joined up with a social media company. Like, is that still true or not?
No. No. It was, and I feel bad for teenagers today because, damn, that was the golden era of the internet. It was truly about connecting. It was truly about finding your people. It was truly about finding friends and having safe spaces, right? Which is really hard for teenagers today. That's not what the internet does today. I don't even think there are message boards today, right? Comment threads are not communities. So I feel bad. So it's not the same. A Taylor Swift community, I'm not sure, is really a community. It's like it's a lot of fans that watch one video, right?
Yeah.
The communities back then, in the golden era of the internet that I miss, it really was a community. You knew the people, you knew the levels they play. We didn't just talk about Mariah. I was like, it was literally your third space, right? So it was really a golden era for this moment in time, for sure. And Mariah fostered it. And there's a reason why, not just because her musicality is so good, because there's lots of artists just as talented, but she has always been fan first, community first, from even before that. Always.
Do you think that relates to how hard she had to fight for what she could do and for her own? I mean, we talked about this just a tiny bit in our episode, but her mental health struggles also that maybe she came to know of, like, did that contribute to her also just like having this bond with her community and then, of course, through you also?
I think for her, you know, there are some artists where, like, they're big artists, but it's still their job, right? You know, it's their job, and then they have, quote unquote, a private life or whatever. Mariah is Mariah 24/7, right? This is not her job. This is who she is. She is Mariah, legendary Carrie, day and night, right? And that you can't learn. It just is, right? It is a being. And so in that way, that's why she's so close with her fans. The fans are like, that's her life, right? There's no separation for her, and you feel it. So in that way, it's very quote unquote authentic. I hate that word because it's overused, but in that way, it's real, right? Real talk. And so that's how she looks at it. And then her songs feed into that. Her songs are all about believing in yourself and, you know, making your own way and all these things. So when the fans give that response back to her, she feeds off of it, but it never turns off for her. It's not a clock out job for her, right? And so that, I think, is really special in a fan community. She has these like personal connections with fans. Like, if you go with her to like a meet and greet or something, or even at a show, she knows fans. Like, she's like, oh, I've seen you at every show, and she's like excited about it. So it's pretty cool.
Do you think any of that like can be mapped back to her gospel connection and like the community that we find in religion and in those spaces? Do you see any thread between that? Like, is she a religious person, or is she just influenced by that type of music? You might know, but
yeah, this might be a question more for her. But
yeah, of course.
From what I know,
I wish she would come on our podcast.
I know. we'll put the vibes out there. She'd know better than me, but from my fan perspective, she is religious and spiritual. But I think it has more to do just with the type of person she is, right? She is a good person. So at the end of the day, no matter what she wants good things for people and good human beings, right? Or she's just a good human. So what I mean by that is, like, you know, she gets criticized to be called a diva. Now she owns it. But back then it was like, oh, she's a diva. Here's what I experienced of her divaness. Because I went on tour with her. Her divaness is about her. And I've been with artists where it's about everybody else, just FYI. So like with her, it's about her. So what I mean by that is she doesn't put it on you. She's like, I know this is my thing. I know this is my thing and everybody wants to do it, but she doesn't get like mad at you. You know what I mean? She's like, this is my thing. That's like, and she plays it up and makes it funny. Like, yeah, I know I only like pink things or whatever it is.
What is like the weirdest, not weirdest, but most like eccentric diva request that you've seen? Not just from Mariah Carey, but like from anybody.
Oh, from anyone? Do you know what's funny is, I don't know. I don't know if I can think off the top of my head of a specific, but Mariah's stuff isn't that bad. It's like, and later when I went, worked with very many other artists very closely, like especially vocalists, you have to be particular about the humidifier, the tea, And so like people would be like, she's so strict about this. I'm like, yeah, that's her freaking instrument. That's like a $1 million instrument. You better get her the humidifier, right? I remember I went on tour years later with another well-known band and I was on the bus with them and they were always apologetic. They were like, I'm sorry, but we can't have the air conditioning on. And even though it was like warm, because it just like dries their voice.
Yeah.
And so it's things like that, but people are like, they're a diva because they don't want the air conditioner on. And I'm like, this is $1 million instrument.
Maybe that's why Flea was naked the whole time.
Maybe, yes, for the instrument. I will tell you,
one way to put
I don't know specific, but I will tell you, the biggest divas were the men.
Yeah, I believe
it. The biggest divas. I'll tell you off mic.
Oh my God. The listeners are going to be really mad about all this. Like the 30 minutes of info dump we get at the end here. Have to ask, because this came up in our podcast, our conversation, the athleticism of the high notes. Like we had this question because, you know, there's all this stuff and I don't need to talk about the lip syncing like on the Dick Clark show or whatever. Like that's stupid. But like, the choices she makes to do a song every single day for a 200-day tour or whatever. And, you know, we noticed because that's how nerdy we are that like, well, she does the high note, but she doesn't do the run up to the high note. Did you learn anything just being around her so much about the things that she had to do, especially live, to do those things in the same way that like I'm interrupting myself, but like an athlete would have a crazy workout routine, crazy diet, like aside from just don't turn the AC on. How does she manage those moments and the crazy feats of vocal agility and just like practicing and training and does it get in her head? Like I get stressed out when I have to go on stage because I might blow a high note and I'm not even like good, right? So anything you noticed would be super fascinating to hear.
From what I saw, so I was on the marketing side. So unfortunately unfortunately for me, I would be, you know, not as much part of the production,
right,
at least with her. But what I experienced was she was nonstop singing all the time. So what that meant was warming up, practicing, doing scales, things like that. So I have a very distinct memory, a fan memory of being with her where we were walking after a show. So we were in the backstage of the arena and I was with her and like, you know, 10 people around her as we go on one of those like freight elevators, you know, at the arena to go wherever we were going. And so we're all standing in the freight elevator and she's just like, la 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 la, like that. And I'm like up doing like all this stuff. So I remember like my knees went weak because Mariah Carey is like doing these crazy trills in front of me. But that would happen a lot. Like she would just be like constantly doing scales and stuff and all that. And I don't know if she did it, again, you'd have to ask her, but from what I noticed, it didn't seem that conscious. Like she just was doing it all the time.
And vocal stimming, but it's more, I guess.
Yeah, because it's fun and whatever, but she's like constantly doing like these scales.
I love the idea of she's like, you're all about to have a business meeting. She just says like, I'm sorry, can we have this whole meeting in song? Everybody just sing everything. We have to keep warming up. That is so funny. And like, I can totally imagine you, even once you'd been doing it for a couple of years, just the idea of the brain check. What's the word for it? Of just like, oh my God, what's happening right now? I'm in this freight elevator. Is this
just real? FYI, to this day, I will get starstruck by Mariah. Okay. And she knows it. I say to her face, like, you're making me so starstruck. And in my career, I've worked with many, many, many people. She is the only one that gets me. So it's always exciting to see other people, but she is at another level.
It like reverts you back to that high school. You got that call for the first time.
It's like the aura around. Like, she's just so
crazy. I bet she smells so good. Oh my God. She smells really good. I bet she does.
So good.
That was one of my questions for you. What does she smell like?
Her hair so soft.
I did not think of that question.
Man, rich people's hair and skin routine. Like, we don't even know.
They have all the stuff. And she probably has like the best stuff that you can't even like buy.
Yeah,
at the store.
I'm like, I'm over here with my Aquaphor that'll do just fine. Can I ask you a question? Have either of you ever seen her live, like randomly?
No. I haven't.
Highly recommend, especially when she comes back to Vegas, just because it's just the effortlessness of the voice. You just have to experience in person. And you know, you've seen enough live shows to know it's very different from TV to live. And to me, that's what always gets me, like, especially with the high notes and everything that she does.
It's not like, it's so, not make-believe.
And it's so effortless. So
I'd love to see a Christmas concert if she tours again.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Oh, she'll do that every Christmas.
I love it. I can't get tickets. Like, they're really hard to get and really expensive. So if you got
to hook
up. But
that's why, like,
okay.
And I know I said that I didn't want to talk about it, but like, that's what's so stupid about the like scandals back in the 90s or early 2000s, whenever that was, of like, oh, we caught the person lip sync. It's like, do you think she actually can't do that? Like, it's one, like
girl,
it's
can
one
sing.
Thing to to catch somebody Milli Vanilli, right? They're cheating us. But like, as if anybody thought that Mariah Carey couldn't hold her own vocally, right? You're saying effortlessly. If you're having a bad night and it's New Year's Eve, you still got to do the show, right? And it's part of being a professional.
Your contract's a contract.
Do whatever you have to do. And the idea, especially in the 90s, of like, any sort of inauthenticity was the devil, right? As if she's been faking it the whole time, back to the ladies.
Right, and like thousands and tens of thousands of performances. Right. I mean, any instrument, even if you were playing a trumpet, you know, but people forget that your vocal cords are an instrument, right? And so, man, and 20 degrees out there and probably horrible sound and like crazy production, like, forget it.
I'm just see like a successful woman and we want to disprove it. We want to poke holes in it and say like, it can't really be her. Like, it's got to be a
trick. But don't feel too bad for her, because she's a badass. And
I don't feel bad for her.
Yeah, and have thick skin, because immediately after that specific performance you're talking about, she released her own merch that was like, I need a cup of tea or something. And she released like mugs.
She had a cold
that had
or something that
like,
day. Is that what it was?
Yeah, she said something like, I need a sip of tea, and everybody made fun of it. And then she was like, fine, I'll just make it. And I actually have the mug in my cabinet.
So what was it like being a super fan, obsessive to the point that kids were calling you the crazy Mariah Carey girl at high school, to then working for people that, like, you, I don't know, were you an obsessive Linkin Park fan before, or were you just, oh, they're a band, I'm going to get this job? Like, what was it like? Like, do you prefer being as engaged in the artist?
Yeah.
Or is it kind of nice to have a professional distance? Like, I imagine you never quite had it like you did with Mariah Carey with any of your other clients, right?
Right. Well, I'm a fan of everybody I worked with. Mariah's just at another level, right? Mm-hmm. Like I said, she's really the only person that still gets me starstruck. The other bands, so some of the ones I have the deepest kind of memories with and the deepest working relationships with are Ashley Tisdale, Michelle Branch, Linkin Park. There's a few others, but those are some of the big ones. Super fans. Like, Michelle Branch is a good one because I worked with her from the beginning for a couple of years. And of course I was a super fan. I'm there also their marketing manager. So I always say this just as a marketer, no matter what you're marketing, if there's a business students out there, you better like it. Because if you don't believe it, how are you going to get anybody else to believe it? Right. So the way I do it is I immerse myself. And so I have to be a fan. And then I know what the fans need or want to. Like, it's, I can relate, right? So with all a lot of the bands, I'm a music nerd general, so I listen to everything. Even though I'm a Mariah girl, I listen to everything, and I love live music. I love, vocalists are really my thing, but I love everybody. And so I became fans just by knowing the artistry, and I had the great fortune to work with these amazing bands. I got a few duds in there too. But to answer your question, yes, I immersed myself in a super fandom of them too, but typically it would be at a level of the musicality, right? For those people. Mariah is holistic, everything.
Like, you knew her life story and everything. Like,
correct. Like, life story. I'm like, she's who I want to emulate. But she's a great person. She, like, you know, there's so much more I get from her, but that has a lot to do with just, I think, being so young, you know, when I first became a fan of hers.
Was there ever like a client that you were thinking about working with, and you don't have to name, just wondering, like, and then you listen to their music and you're like, nah, I'm not feeling it. I'm not going to like take on this client. I don't feel that like connect. I can't love it for whatever reason.
So when I worked at Warner Brothers, I was a director of marketing there. And so you don't have the luxury of picking, right? You get handed the rock, like, here's the slate, right? And so there definitely were...
Worst Warner Brothers bands songs? Ever, Google search. Sorry,
he's
go
Googling.
Ahead.
Yeah, and what were the years I was at Warner Brothers? I was at Warner Brothers from 2002 to 2006 or something like that. There were, I mean, you won't even find them. They're like, what are the lowest sales records?
Because I bet, like, if you're, as the marketing director, right, if you're not passionate, even subconsciously, that's going to convey in the work in some level.
Well, right? It was less about passion. It was more about the product. So I definitely had some artists where, like, I loved them as an artist and I wanted them to do well. Just the song wasn't good, you know? And so, like, and that's with anything you market. Like, if the product's not good, there's no amount of marketing that's going to help you. And that's not necessarily the artist's fault. That's the A&R guy's fault, right? But like, production, whatever it is. So that just, it's more like I did the best I can and it would just suck mostly, you know, like when we couldn't do it. And then there was stuff like, at that time, Warner Brothers was a full on hardcore rock label, right? So we had people like Avenged Sevenfold and, you know, My Chem and stuff, and who I love. But
she's so cool, like My Chem, like no big deal.
First name basis, yeah.
I'm sorry, MCR. MCR. But
I'm like Mr. Romance.
Yes. Mr. Chemical.
So like Avenged Sevenfold, great band. Not necessarily my genre, right? I can appreciate it. I get
noted
it.
Noted Mariah Carey cover band, Avenged Sevenfold.
Exactly. I appreciate, and I'm not like, they're amazing. I appreciate it. I know what type level it is, but it's hard for me to understand an Avenged Sevenfold fan, right? And so in that was just more difficult for me, you know. I could do it. It was just like more difficult. That's all.
I have like other like fandom questions, like, so we're all at least somewhat familiar with the Eras Tour, right, and Taylor Swift, and how her fans have like certain moments that aren't like broadcasted out, but there's certain like call and response moments in live performance with some like Taylor Swift songs. I'm wondering if there's anything in the Mariah Carey world that like only a true fan would know to like have this, like there's some like inside jokes.
That's a great question. Okay. Yes, 100%. That's a great question. Love it. I love fandoms too, but not with the songs. I think with the songs, there are definitely some things, like Always Be My Baby is one when the fans do the do-do-do, you know, part. Cute. I'm not a singer, but I secretly do pop star routines in my bedroom still. But to answer your question, lots of inside jokes, yes. And remember that she's got a very tight community, as does a Swiftie. So there'll be random inside jokes where I think if you went, or you know, a Mariah layman went, they would think is like, what the heck is she talking about? What weird? Like, she'll go on for a while. So there are some. So that's the Lamely. Her fans are lambs, and they call it the Lamely.
Is that in and of itself an inside joke? Like, because it feels kind of religious almost on some level.
I mean, you know how like every fandom has a name now? That's just what hers are.
Wait, did you name that?
Her lambs. I did not name that. That came later, but her fans definitely had the name before people were named fans, I think. Yeah. This is like, I feel like lambs came out around 2004 or something.
Have you ever engineered like the fandom name? Like if you're
in a band? I have not.
Do people do that?
I like how disappointed you were.
Oh, it's just, well, I didn't even realize like that could be it, like someone so has to start.
Here's
it,
how
right?
I, yeah. So every marketer's a little bit different style. Here's my style. I go on the natural seeds, right? So that's why I like to immerse myself in it. So I'm more of a put a fuel on the fire of what's already, you know, naturally coming up, as opposed to orchestrate, manipulate, or like
create. Like you find the social media post where someone has coined the fandom and you amplify that instead of
correct. Or I see what our fans naturally starting to like do, or you throw stuff out there and see what sticks, and then you start to like rise it. So that's usually what my style is, at least.
There's such a connection between marketing and psychology, and I tell my psych students minor in marketing, take a marketing class. And I tell the marketing students, like, if you could take one or two consumer behavior psychology classes, you can really figure out a lot. It just get a more well-rounded sense of both fields, I think. And a lot of like very prominent early psychologists, if they left the field, they went to marketing.
Wow. 100%. And you bring up your students too, because this was when I work with students, I think a lot of students, or just not just students, people don't, they underestimate how much they know already, right? Without, because they're like, I never went to class for this. I'm like, you know a lot already. So I'll give you an example.
You just don't have the jargon yet. Like you don't know the word to call it, but like you understand.
Right. And I'll give you an example. Like when I was at Facebook and Instagram, we would, you know, hire some entry level people. And so there's like straight out of college student or people, and they would come in an interview and I would say, what is your experience with Instagram? And they would say, oh, nothing. And I can't say, I can't lead you in the interview, but right away I would just be like, oh God, no. So I would tell all my students later, do you have an Instagram account? They say, yes. Do you follow people? Yes. Do you know what you like? Yes. Do you know what you don't like? Yes. You have experience with Instagram. Okay. Like, you know this stuff, like in terms of marketing, but yeah. Students who are listening here, you know it. Go do it. I was 16. I showed up all those record execs. You can do it too.
Right, because you have instincts and you can just trust your instincts. Correct. Like you have a lot of power, even if you don't have the jargon, if you don't have the right outfit to wear, whatever.
I definitely did not.
I'm like picturing you and it's like so endearing for you. I don't know. Nicole, just a very endearing mental image.
I was such a nerd in high school. Okay, Mark may or may not remember. We were both nerds. Sorry, Mark.
I was going to say, I don't think Mark is like any. I know he reached his full nerdom probably in college and grad school from what I understand.
What I have to say, and I know you're a San Diego hater, and we have to end on why you hated San Diego so much, but our school was big enough, and I guess the era was such that there was this weird, like, cool nerd vibe. There were the nerds, but there were also like, you could be a nerd and have friends in the late 90s San Diego. And I'm very, very thankful for that. You could be a nerd and have a significant other. It wasn't the late 80s or whatever, and it wasn't also the late aughts where the nerds were starting to ruin the world or whatever. Like, it was still like, we could be self-attested nerds or whatever and still be kind of cool and not get like picked on by all the rich kids or whatever. And I'm thankful for that, but you had to get out of there. So maybe you had a different experience than me. I lasted one more year before I went to college, but.
And now it's like cool to be a nerd.
It's like, oh my God, we've been recording for an hour and like, we haven't even talked about
the
song.
Yeah, I mean, we probably need to wrap up for your sake. We have so much dirt to hear.
I was ready.
Dude, what do you want to talk about? Let's talk about it. We've been talking a lot about the marketing thing because it's so fascinating because we don't get that, right? Certainly, I don't know anything about it.
Well, when we started talking about you, you sent me the song Emotions.
Yeah, because that's this is like a spinoff from our main episode where we talk about like the whistle note and emotion and just the vocal acrobatics of Mariah Carey in general.
Okay. I'm going to ask you this because the last episode of our first season, I'm basically bullshitting talking about Nirvana, right? I'm doing this crazy music theory, thumb firmly in cheek. It's true, but it's nonsense. my question for you as a Mariah superfan who actually knows her and has a relationship with her, I sent you the episode. Did it sound like bullshit, or was some of it actually like, oh, they actually, or are you like rolling your eyes like, oh my God, if Mariah ever hears this, she's going to be so embarrassed that I know this guy. Like, you tell me.
And talk
to me about emotions. You know?
Would Mariah like us? Yeah. Like, this is what we want to know. Would she be like, wow, they actually get it? Or would she be like, shut up, Mark and Nicole?
No, absolutely. And here's why, is because when you talk about Mariah, or not you, but everybody, when the mainstream talks about Mariah, you very rarely talk about the musicality, the production, right, the layers, all of that. And to know Mariah, and not just to know Mariah, just to know her as a deep fan too, she has written every single song that's not a cover.
Boss.
She's just gotten some Songwriter Hall of Fame thing. I don't think people realize that. So every single number one, except for I'll Be There, was, because that's a cover, she wrote. All the lyrics are hers, right? So it's deeply personal. The melodies, the only thing she usually collaborates, because she's not a musician.
You mean she's not an instrumentalist?
The melodies, the musicality.
Yeah.
Instrumentalist, yeah.
All the singers were like cracking their knuckles, ready to fight you on that. They're musicians.
They're musicians. Yes, the instrument is their voice. And then if I go back to something like Emotions, which is 1991 when it came out, that means she's recording it in 1990 while her first album is blowing up with 5 number one singles. Wow. She's also in the studio recording her second album. Taylor Swift only records an album every 2 years, okay? Right. Mariah has an album every single year of the 90s.
That's so crazy.
Went number one, by the way.
That's like
number
the
one,
Beatles
number one, number one, every
and
single
year. And it was probably harder to produce music at that time, just more stuff.
Way more expensive.
Because there's less tech. Yeah.
So that's what I wanted to say to your point about harder to record is, at that time, it was not normal to, or typical, to record backing vocals for yourself. Okay, you had session backup singers because it's like easier. The artist is expensive. Studio time is expensive.
It was
a Michael Jackson thing, mostly.
Yeah.
Correct. So Mariah was the one that's like, this is some of the stuff she was fighting for that people don't see in the background. Like, she was fighting for more production control, more writing control, wanting to do all her own background vocals. So if you actually listen to those early records, she's doing all the vocal layering. She's doing all of her own backup vocals. She's writing the backup vocals. And that was kind of unheard of in 1991. Now it's typical, right? Listen to an Ariana Grande song or a Taylor Swift song. Like, they're doing everything. It's a little bit easier. They're vocalists. They have control. Not typical back then. Mm-hmm. So that is pretty incredible, paving the way. I mean, you're talking 30 years ago. So
right. In
Emotions, you can 100% hear it. And it's
because there's the low her and the high her, and they're trading off and all that, right?
Correct. And even just the little, like, if you really pay attention, I'm one of those people when I listen to music, I hardly hear the lyrics the first time, like always listening to the music. So
same.
Like, even if I listen to a song like 50 times, I can't remember the lyrics, but I'll remember every little like, or like whatever.
You sound like Mark.
Yeah. So if you listen to Emotions, you'll hear some of the detailed backup vocal melodies. Mm. Okay, that add these interesting layers where it's not just singing the chorus, right? You'll hear like, ooh, or whatever, you know, these very, seem so basic, but when you really think about that song in multi-track layers, you're like, wow, that is pretty incredible. And so to do that in 1991, when we barely had computers, right? Like, pretty cool.
Right. It's like unheard of. And even like, you think just the business side of it, I mean, you know, she's got to be at minimum have a good team around her, like at minimum. But
yeah.
Also like the fact that she wrote it all herself.
You have to remind me when you were talking about Emotions before, did you talk about the producers? Did you mention that or did you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's one of the guys from CNC Music Factory, right? Was one of the...
Correct. One of the,
we talked about it a little bit. We didn't dive into it. Is there something we should know about that?
Yeah, and there's another one you should listen to. So Robert Cole and David Clavillis are CNC Music Factory. She worked with them quite a bit in the Emotions album and the next album, the Music Box album. David Cole is incredible. He also produced Make It Happen, and she tells these amazing stories of recording Make It Happen, which is the next single after Emotions. But what I would tell you and everybody who's listening is go back and watch on YouTube Emotions Live on her MTV Unplugged. Mm. Okay. And her MTV Unplugged is the number 4 biggest selling MTV Unplugged album.
We're fans of MTV Unplugged.
Yeah. So it's Eric Clapton, Rod Stewart, Nirvana, then Mariah.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Ooh, I'd love to check that out.
Yeah. So if you go back, watch the Emotions Unplugged Live. David Cole is playing piano for her. And so if you just watch for David Cole, you will become the biggest David Cole fan, okay, and CNC fan, and like realize what they did for music too. David Cole's playing piano, and he starts with this insane, like, I don't know, you have to give me the music words, but he's like, like down the piano,
like
up and down. That's
something.
How it starts.
Yeah. Okay, maybe I'll pipe it in. Maybe I'll pipe it in the episode.
Yes, it's insane. And so then Mariah starts, and then, because I watched it a couple times before this episode, and when you watch, so cute, or just to remind myself, you watch it once just for Mariah, then watch it again just for David. Holy shit. Okay. You see him, he's just perfection on the piano, doing the most amazing things. Okay. And it's literal perfection. Like, he's all crazy, like going, it's so cool. And then you start to realize the magic that would happen between Mariah and David on these songs, including Emotions. Okay. And David would go on to do many of her remixes, and unfortunately he passed away young. Otherwise they'd probably still be working together. And And why I'm making such a big deal of it is because of the influence of the sound he had on this stage of her career. His Music Box would become one of her biggest selling albums then. That's the one with Hero. And the influence is David Cole's bringing in more gospel. He's bringing R&B, but he's bringing a lot of house music to him, as you can see, right? So how do you combine house music with like pop and R&B? Listen to Music Box and Emotions, and he's doing it right. And then watch him live on MTV Unplugged. It's unreal. Oh, and then I forgot, on the MTV Unplugged, they have a three person string section going on, you know, and like, I'm a sucker for strings. So that's pretty cool, because I don't think that's on the original recording. So I highly recommend.
Hey everyone, Mark here in the edit. You may have noticed Nicole and I stopped responding to what Bree was saying. We lost her temporarily for some reason, but it was still recording. Thank God for technology. And it was super fascinating. So yeah, leaving it in.
Were you paused that entire freaking time? Because I just thought you were like so focused on what I was saying.
I feel like we could talk for hours about all these artists. There's still got to be gossip.
For hours, for sure.
The listeners are dying to hear the after recording conversation. But listeners, we're going to have to even have that conversation later, because we've gone long and we got to let Bree go. Can you tell people where they can find you? Like, are you writing? Ooh. Are you on social media? What are we? You got a podcast to pitch?
I'm the social media marketer that has scrubbed myself from social media.
Yeah, well, you know.
You know too much.
Yeah, I do know too much, and I highly advise everybody else to do that. But if you really want to connect with me, I am still on LinkedIn, which is also the worst. But right. I'm sorry, I am there. I have a personal website. You can Google me, Bree Nguyen. I'm there. LinkedIn is probably honestly the best way to get me.
Cool.
But I'm pretty disconnected. So like, come visit me in Seattle. We'll talk Mariah every time.
And it would be super great to have you back to talk about. Maybe we'll cover one of these other artists. Well, actually, we are.
Anytime.
I actually know we are later in the season. I don't want to say.
Yay,
I'll say later
because
we try not to spoil too many episodes ahead for the listeners. But
will you promise me you'll watch the MTV Unplugged?
I'm going to watch it tonight.
I'm
100% Unplugged.
I will let the listeners hear some of the David Cole piano intro of
that. Hear that beginning. That beginning.
So good.
This has been great.
Thanks so much for coming on, Bree.
I
want to talk to you all day. I'm so sad that we have to go. We can't just talk forever. Right?
Well, it's so fun.
Hey, Nicole, this whole guest thing's pretty cool though, yeah?
Having guests,
good
I
idea.
Think, is great. I love just talking to you one-on-one, Mark, but I think it's getting kind of tired. It's nice to like
absolutely
have an extra voice in the mix for sure.
All right.
And hey,
thanks,
Mark,
for listening, guys. Okay.
Mark, San Diego's kind of nice now,
Oh, so everybody has to leave, right? Nevermind the Music is hosted by Nicole Batcher and me, Mark Poppany. I also produce. Please leave us a rating and a review, and don't forget to follow. We're Never Music Pod on social media, and you can also send us an email at nevermusicpod@gmail.com. Nevermind the Music is part of the Lorehounds Network. Join the conversation by going to thelorehounds.com and hop on our Discord server. Thanks for listening.